Luke chapter 15. Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear him. But the Pharisees and teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." Then Jesus told them this parable. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Does he not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep." I tell you that in the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. Or suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Does she not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost coin." In the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. Jesus continued, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired men have food to spare, and here I am starving to death? I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men.' So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son said to his father, said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. 'Your brother has come,' he replied, 'and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound.' The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, 'Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours, who has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him?' 'My son,' the father said, 'you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad, because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.'" This is the word of the Lord. Please be seated.
I believe that a solid strategy for Bible study is to look for words that are repeated in any particular scripture passage. When an author repeats a word several times, you know that that's a theme emerging out of the passage. And if you can dig a little deeper into that theme, you might just see a little bit deeper into what the author is trying to communicate. Let me go back to the passage that Matt just read, all of chapter 15, and pull out a few highlights and see if you can't see the common thread and the common word that runs through this entire chapter. Verse 4, suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Does he not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep? And later on, the man finds the lost sheep. He calls his friends together and says, I have found my lost sheep. The next parable, or suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Later on, she calls her friends all together and says, I have found my lost coin. In the third parable, the father says, this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And the parable even ends on a similar note when in verse 32, the father says to the older brother, but we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. You see the word that gets repeated over and over again throughout this chapter? The word is lost. See, Luke is trying to communicate something exceedingly important about lost things. He wants us to read this chapter and walk away knowing something deeper about God and his relationship with that which is lost. And here's what I think it is. Luke wants us to understand that the Father resolves to seek that which is lost. Last weekend, Holly Smith, who is our children's ministry pastor, and I took a road trip with three of our daughters up to Baltimore. You think, oh, they were probably trying to do a little educational experience with their daughters, get them up to Baltimore and the beautiful aquarium they have up there. Aquariums, please. Much better educational experience in our minds was to take them to William & Mary's basketball game that Saturday afternoon at Royal Farms Arena in downtown Baltimore. So there we were, three of our daughters together, two dads together, all in a van together. You don't want to know what happened in that van for us to get all those kids up to Baltimore and back in one day. I'll just tell you what happened when we were in Baltimore. We see a great game. The Tribe played wonderfully. The Tribe was up most of the game, which took a little tension out of the room and allowed us all to enjoy the game. And we had some wonderful seats, about four rows up from the court. But in the second half, the people who had the seats right in the very front row, right next to the court, they vacated those seats, and there was just this wide open row right next to the court. And somehow our daughter started migrating down there with a couple of their friends. So you had all these people in this arena and these four little girls. If you saw the game on TV, they got on TV quite a few times because you have this whole arena filled with people trying to watch the game. And there are these, I think there was five of them with their friends, five little girls just dancing around in the front row as the Tribe played the game. And so Holly and I are just sitting there together enjoying watching our kids bleed a little green and gold. And as the game came to an end and the victory looked like it was in hand, the whole place started standing up on their feet, cheering on the Tribe. And then the game ended and Holly went down to high-five all the kids and he shoots this look my way. And I knew exactly what the look on his face meant. When we locked eyes, I knew something had happened. And he yells at me, where's Stratton? Stratton's gone. We could see the kids the whole time. But when everyone stood up and started cheering for the final 30 seconds, we lost sight of them. We just assumed they were there the whole time. And I saw this look on Holly's eyes. And he didn't even have to say anything. I knew exactly what his eyes were communicating, and that was this. Only one thing matters right now. I must mobilize myself and any willing body to action. If we could have spoken, I know Holly would have said, Trav, it is time to put down the popcorn and move, do something. Even the Tribe's victory is of secondary importance to seek my lost daughter. And so as soon as we locked eyes, as soon as I locked eyes with Holly, I ran. I thought, no kid gets out of a stadium without running up an aisle. And so I run out to the closest aisle, and I look up, and there's Stratton halfway up the aisle. And so I run, I grab Stratton, and then I do the Lion King, and I'm holding her up. Oh, Holly, you know, I've got her. And, you know, the relief comes over Holly's face. Because Holly, as her father, he resolved to seek that which is lost. How could he do anything else but in that moment dedicate every resource available to him to seek his lost daughter? And as we come to Luke chapter 15, we will see another father who resolves to seek that which is lost. How could he do anything else? And as I came to this passage, I started asking the question, why? It's a good question. Larry King, the famous interviewer, says it's the best question ever. You can always keep a conversation just asking the question, why? You get an answer, why? So I started asking the question, why would the father seek that which is lost? Why would he resolve above all else to do that? It almost is second nature to us as parents. Of course we stop everything and resolve to seek that which is lost. But why? And I think as we read the parable here and as we understand in our own lives, the reason we resolve to seek that which is lost is because we understand the consequences of being lost are just devastating. The consequences of being lost are just absolutely devastating. I'll show you a picture of how everything turned out at the basketball game. This is us right here, everyone, all three daughters. They all made it back home safe and sound. And to think that one of our daughters would not be in that picture at the end of the game is just unfathomable. And so the father resolves to seek that which is lost because the consequences of being lost are devastating. Let's look at some of the consequences that we find in this parable. First one is, when we're lost, we get hungry. This younger son in the story asks his father to divide up the inheritance between them, between him and the older brother, and says, hey, Dad, I've been waiting long enough. I got a lot of things that I want to do. I got a lot of fun I want to have. And basically what he's saying to the dad is, you're not dying quick enough, and I need some more resources. I need some spending cash in my pocket, some walking money to hit the street, and I need it now, Dad. I'm tired of waiting. And so the dad, I'm sure, with a sad look on his face, obliges the son and gives him his share of the estate. And we read that the son packs up everything he has, and he goes off to live in this distant country. And in the distant country, he squanders everything he has. And that's a story a lot of us have heard. But there are a few key details that lead me to this idea of the consequence of being lost. The first consequence is that we get hungry. Because what happens right after he squanders everything he has? Before there's a problem, what happens? Verse 14. There was a severe famine in the whole country. And all of a sudden, he is now hungry. He didn't see this consequence of getting lost in the distant country coming. All of a sudden, there's a famine. And now what happens when there are famines is happening to this young man. He is hungry. I had a friend who was a doctor. He's still my friend. And he still is a doctor, but he went through a difficult time in his life. He got lost, and he did what doctors should not do, which is prescribe medicine to themselves. And he prescribed it to himself one time just to deal with a little ache or pain here, and ended up happening a second time and a third time, and enough times that he got addicted to the pills that he was prescribing to himself. And in that moment, he realized that he was hungry. He was hungry for pain relief. He was hungry to have a part of his life get numb so he just wouldn't have to think about it. Eventually, his behavior caught up with him, and the authorities came into his office. And I remember asking him, What did you think at that moment when the authorities came into your office? He said, Travis, it was the strangest feeling that came over me. He said, I was relieved. I was relieved. And I said, really? I said, relief. That's an interesting emotion that you felt. He said, I didn't realize it. But before, when I started prescribing the pills, I thought I'd reached my basement. I thought that I'd gotten as low as I could go in life. And when the authorities showed up, I realized something that I think everyone has to realize at some point in their life. There's a basement to our basement. And when I saw them come in, I was relieved because I realized I'd finally hit the bottom. And I was in the basement of my basement. And now there would be a path to healing from here. And so he went to rehab. He worked hard to admit his lostness, admit how he got there, what drove him to that, and he's still a wonderful doctor to this day now. You see, the younger son, when he gets hungry, he starts a journey to the basement of his basement. You see, in verse 14, as I said, he spends everything. You think that would be the bottom. He had a whole inheritance, and now it's lost, but that's not the bottom for him. After he spends everything, you see in verse 15, he hires himself out to a citizen of that country. Now, this is a Jewish boy, as Jesus is telling this parable to a Jewish audience. They were in danger of becoming unclean just going into a Gentile country. This young man has gone into a Gentile country. It has gone so poorly for him in that Gentile country that now he is the servant. He's the slave of a Gentile. And you think that's the basement. You think that's the bottom. It goes deeper still because that gentleman that he works for sends him out in his fields to feed pigs. Again, he's unclean for being in the Gentile country. He's unclean for working for a Gentile man. And now he's working with the most vile of all animals in Jewish culture, swine. He's feeding swine. But he takes another step lower still in verse 16. He actually longs to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating. And let me just pause there and say, this is the consequence of what happens when we get lost. We get hungry, and then we hunger for the wrong things. We hunger for things that actually can't satisfy us. And so you think, Travis, he must have reached the basement of his basement when he longs to eat the food that the pigs are eating. I go, there's one more step down the ladder for him. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating. The end of verse 16, what does it say? But no one gave him anything. He was not even valued enough in the sight of his master to eat the pig slot. That is what I call the basement to the basement. And he's reached it. And the consequence of being lost for the younger son is this hunger. And now he's hungering for the wrong things. He's hungering for things that can never fill him up. And he finds himself in the basement of his basement. What have you been hungry for lately? What have you been thinking of taking a bite of? Maybe not a piece of food, or maybe it's like my friend, a prescription medication, an internet website, a conversation with a coworker that you know is inappropriate. What are you hungry for? And do you realize that that hunger only leads one place? It leads down to the basement of our basement. And it can actually never satisfy us. We start hungering for the wrong things. And these are the consequences of being lost. The first thing is we get hungry. And next, the second consequence of being lost is we get angry. We also get angry when we're lost. We lash out at other people. See, in order to understand Luke's parable here, we have to understand the audience. that Jesus is teaching the parable to. And so I want to invite everyone to open their Bible to Luke chapter 15 so you can see this for yourselves right in the text. Grab one of those Bibles that's under the row in front of you, or if you're in the balcony or in the mezzanine, it's right beside you. Open up to Luke 15. It's toward the back. You start seeing the common names, Matthew, Mark, Luke. You hit John, you've gone too far. Open up your Bible. I want you to see this for yourself. It'll jump off the page in order to understand what Jesus is really trying to teach us about the nature of being lost. You need to understand the audience that Jesus is speaking to and connect that with the first line of the parable that Jesus tells. I'll give everyone a moment to get there. It's that important. 10:35, I hear in the red Bibles. All right, let's look at the audience. Luke 15, 1. Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear him. But the Pharisees and teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." Then Jesus told them this parable. So look at the two groups that are gathered around Jesus. You've got tax collectors and sinners. And tax collectors is just a euphemism for really big sinners. People that have really messed up. People that have really dropped the ball because everyone's mad at them because they've sided with Rome, who's an occupying force in Israel at this time. So they're the big capital S sinners. And then you got the regular small S sinners all gathered there. So you got the sinners. And then verse 2, who else is there? You've got the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. And so here the Pharisees, these are the people that keep the law, people that honor the Sabbath. They do all the right things. And then you have the teachers of the law. These are the people that teach everyone how to honor the Sabbath and do all of the right things. So you have the moral and the immoral all right there. You have the sinners and the saints all right there listening to Jesus. Now connect that to the first line of the parable that we're looking at this morning in Luke 15, 11. Jesus continued, "There was a man who had how many sons? Two sons." And the title that most Bibles give to this parable, it's a misnomer. It actually misleads you from the true meaning of the parable. And I've given everyone permission before, if you have one of our red Bibles, you have a pen, just add an S. It's the parable of the lost sons, plural. See, Jesus is speaking to these two different groups, the sinners and the saints, and they're both lost. They're just lost in two different ways. And that's why he tells this parable. There was a man, and he has two sons. Both sons are lost. They're just lost in different ways. How do I know they're both lost? I know they're both lost because as you read the parable, you see they're both separated from the Father. They're both somewhere where they shouldn't be. See, the younger son is separated from the Father, as we read earlier, in the distant country. And the older son is separated from the Father out in the field. And so you see that the younger son is lost in this distant country, but the older son is equally lost. He's out in the field. Neither one of them, again, let me just point out, is connected with the Father in either of their location. There was a man, and he had two sons. And so the younger son is lost out in the distant country, and eventually, and we'll come back to this, eventually he comes home. And the Father welcomes him and embraces him and throws a robe around him. And they start this great celebration for the younger son's homecoming. And now I want to pick up the story with the older son out in the field in verse 25. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. "Your brother has come," he replied, "and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound." The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him. He becomes angry. Let me make a couple observations about this. Note how long the older brother must have been out in the field. It takes a long time to kill a fattened calf and to prepare him and to call all of the neighbors to celebrate and get the servants to set the tables and the chairs and the dishes and the cups and to bring out the food and the drink again that we have to take time to cook. It would take a long time, maybe even several days, to pull a celebration of that has this much grandeur attached to it. It would pull that much time. It would take that much time to pull a celebration like that together. Why doesn't the older son notice anything's going on? How far out in the fields must he be? How disconnected from the father must he be? Doing good things, doing work, becoming a good citizen, doing that which is right and that is his duty, but he's still disconnected from the father. He's doing good things, but he might not be doing God things, as in spending time with the Father, cultivating his relationship with him, making sure he's sitting at the Father's feet to understand how the Father looks at work in the field, and maybe even taking some Sabbath rest to refresh his soul. He must have been in the field for a long time. He talks to a servant and not a family member. If I walked up to my house and there was a party going on, you know who I'm going to try to find? Nina. What's going on? What happened? Why didn't I know about this? You're going to go to the person you have the closest relationship with in the household. He doesn't find the father. He doesn't find his mother. He doesn't find his brother. He finds one of the servants. He says, hey, servant, come here. Because his relationship with the father hasn't been cultivated for a long time. And then notice his reaction is anger and not joy. You see, if the younger brother is hungry for the wrong things, the older brother is angry about the wrong things. And so I'll just ask the question, what are you angry about this morning? You see, both hunger and anger are a result of separation from the father. And they are the consequences of being lost. And it's kind of a diagnostic tool for you to diagnose, I'll just say it like this, the style of lostness in which you find yourself. What is your style of lostness? Are you hungry this morning? Or are you angry? If you're hungry, you might be like the younger brother out in a distant country. If you're angry this morning, you might be like the older brother out in the field, slaving away for the father, but not realizing your true identity as his son. Again, both hunger and anger are a result of separation from the father. Let's look at our response and the father's response. You see, this parable, like all of the parables we have studied so far in this series, the gospel and story, it ends without resolution. We are not privy to the response of the older brother. This is intentional, and it invites us to consider our response. When you see that the older brother, you don't know if he goes in the party or stays out in the field, Jesus is inviting you to consider, are you going to enter into the home of the Father or not? And so I'll ask, are we ready to admit that we're lost this morning? Are we ready to admit that we're hungry or angry, or maybe some combination of the two? Do we find ourselves separated from the Father this morning? This idea of lostness is a universal human condition that people have been struggling with for centuries upon centuries. I'll just give you one example from maybe the most celebrated piece of literature ever in the history of literature. It's Dante's Inferno. People would debate about that, but it's got to make the top five again, ever. This was written between 1308 and 1320, so it's about 700 years old. This book has stood the test of time for 700 years. Let me tell you the main theme of this book. It's actually in the first line of the book. Dante writes, "In middle of the journey of our days, I found that I was in a darksome wood, the right road lost and vanished in the maze. Those words have stood the test of time for 7 centuries. The idea that sometimes in the middle of our life, we find ourselves in a dark wood. We can't see the path. It's lost. We don't know where we are. It's vanished. We can't see the right way to go. In the middle of the journey of our days, I was in a darksome wood, the right road lost and vanished. People have been struggling with lostness for a long time. So it's okay if you come this morning with some lostness in your soul, because the lack of response from the older brother is intended us to push us toward our response. And in his grace, Jesus gives us the response of the younger brother as a model for us to consider. The older brother is to push us to respond. The younger brother is to model for us how we might respond. The text says 2 things about the younger brother's response. It says this. It says he came to his senses and he got up and went to the Father. He came to his senses. It's an interesting phrase in the original language. It's kind of hard to translate. It almost is improper English when you translate it literally. It means he came to himself. What does that mean? He came to himself. In other words, he realized who he was. He realized his true identity was not a pig farmer in a foreign country, but that he was his father's son. As you find yourself lost in a distant country or working hard in a field this morning, do you realize who you are? Genesis 1:27, the very earliest pages of Scripture, gives us a clue to our identity. We read this. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. You were created in God's image. You have the stamp of the Father impressed on your soul in such a way that no matter how far you run to the distant country or how far you run or how hard you work in the field, nothing can erase that stamp. There will always be a deep and abiding hunger that we have to understand that stamp on our soul, to claim our true identity as sons and daughters of the Father. Do you realize who you are? You are the Father's son. You are the Father's daughter. And then he got up and he went to his father. I love that. It's a simple picture. He got up and he went to the Father. You see, when you come to your senses, when you realize who you are, you start moving back in the direction of the Father, back in the direction of your true home. And I want to invite everyone who's lost this morning to get up and to just start moving in the direction of the Father this morning. There's a great painting by a Dutch painter, a famous Dutch painter named Rembrandt, who deals with this scene. It's called The Return of the Prodigal Son. And Rembrandt is famous for using light and dark in his paintings. And so you see the light is focused where? On the father's embrace of the son, and the figures in the background are in shadow because it's supposed to draw your eyes to that moment of homecoming. And the father, as you see his hands on the son's back, you see the shoes worn out, one shoe slipped off, it's barely even there anymore. The other shoe has holes in it, and the father embracing the son. This painting stirred in a Dutch priest's heart so much that he wrote a reflection on the parable and on this priest, the parable and on this picture and how they relate to one another. And in that book, Henry Nouwen writes this: faith is the radical trust that home has never, faith is the radical trust that home has always been there and will always be there. Faith is the radical trust that home has always been there and will always be there. And that's the message I want to come with this morning. Home has always been there. Home will always be there. Are you ready to make your turn toward the Father this morning? And if you are ready to make that turn toward the Father, I have good news. And the good news is the Father has already turned toward you. Each week we've been asking the question, where do we see the gospel in these stories? Jesus is on a journey from Galilee to Jerusalem, and he's telling all of these different stories, these parables, and each story is an illustration of the good news of the gospel. And I see the gospel in the response and in the resolve of the Father. I'll give you a few examples. If you look at what the Son has asked for, he's asked for his share of the estate. And in the English translation we've been reading from this morning, it says that the Father divided his property between them. And while that kind of smooths the story out in the English language, it actually misses a key part of the gospel and what Jesus is trying to communicate. You see, the Son asks for, in the original language, it's the word for house. Dad, give me my share of the house. And then it says the Father divided, and I'll give you the Greek word because it even has some English cognates. And it says, the Son says, give me the house. And the Father says, I'll divide my bios between you. Bios, bios, what's bios? Biology, biography. Bios means life. The Son asks for his share of the house, and the Father says, actually, I'm not just going to give you the house. I'm going to give you my very life. Sometimes you just can't get better than the King James. The King James captures the flavor of the phrase here. It says this, and he said, a certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me. And he divided unto them his living, his bios. So often we're saying, God, I want this good thing, or I want a blessing in my life. And God's saying, I've given you so much more than goods. I have given my very life for you on the cross. You see, the famine, there's a famine in the land. It's an unintended event. It's an unanticipated event that the younger son has to walk through. He spends all his money, goes, oh, I should be okay. I can just get a job, but he doesn't anticipate a famine in the land. And guess who controls how much it rains and how much it doesn't rain? Only God controls how much it rains, how much it doesn't rain. And God uses that famine to push him to the basement of his basement where he can ultimately see that this is not his home. He must get up and turn toward the Father. I see the Father, the resolve of the Father and the response of the Father and the abundant gifts that he gives the Son. Again, I lament this, but the English translations sometimes smooth out some of the original language in such a way that you miss the radical nature of what God is attempting to bestow on this Son. I want to read you verses 22 through 24 from the ESV, and notice how the ands just pile up. The word and just piles up one on top of the other. But the Father said to his servants, bring quickly the best robe, and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand, and shoes on his feet, and bring the fattened calf, and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to celebrate. You see the gifts just pile up one on top of the other. I see the resolve of the Father in the abundance of the gifts. I see the resolve of the Father in that he runs to his son. He embraces his son. He kisses his son. He weeps around his son's neck. I see the resolve of the Father in that he leaves the party for his older son. He leaves to go after the older son. And when the son badmouths him and says, you never did this for me, Dad. You never did that for me, Dad. The father's response is two words. My son. All of this because the father resolves to seek that which is lost. This whole sermon series started in Luke 9:51. And I want to read that for us as Alex comes forward. Luke 9:51 says this. As the time approached for him to be taken up to heaven, Jesus resolutely set out for Jerusalem. Jesus resolved to go to the cross because the Father resolves to seek that which is lost. The reason everyone could identify with the story of Holly and me at the basketball game is because everyone knows when there's a lost child, you stop everything. You run after that lost child. Our Heavenly Father does the same thing for us because our Heavenly Father resolves to seek that which is lost through Jesus' sacrifice on the cross. Let's contemplate that reality together.